What will happen to the transcript is that we'll, is that once the finished transcript is unedited and approved, you'll each get a copy. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a copy of Chalk, there'll be a copy of History Office, mm-hmm. and we'll bind a copy. If, assuming it's for general release, then we'll also bind a copy and put it in the library. Mm-hmm. It's not for general release and it's just kept in a file. Mm-hmm. So, depending on what options you decide to take with it. Now, we want to get as much background as possible, mm-hmm. and so don't feel like you're telling us too much. You can never tell too much, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And what we were thinking mm-hmm. is that if you're amenable, we'll come back at some mm-hmm. future time when you have mm-hmm. time. But we would like, if mm-hmm. possible, at least get up to the period in which you come to the NRF. Mm-hmm. And this is all at your leisure when you have the time.
Mm-hmm.
What would you prefer?
Oh, I can go ahead first. Okay, then
that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I think we're ready to go. I'll start off asking you about your family background. You want me to go first?
There's a bell.
We'll ask.
Yes.
James and I will both ask. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I have a brief introduction, uh-huh. just for the tape purposes, in order to be ready to go.
Okay, I think we're... I'm just going to be looking from time to time to make sure we're picking up on the tape, all right? And what notes I take may will just be notes for the transcriber, so they'll pick up the...
You know, mm-hmm. you might copy down words or notes, so then it helps access the transcription of the tape. Okay. This is David Van Kuren from the NRL History Office with James Bonney from the Center for History of Chemistry. And we're talking today, February 26, 1987, with Drs. Isabella and Jerome Carl of the Laboratory for the Structure of Matter at the Naval Research Laboratory. Dr. Carl, could you begin by telling us something about your own and your family's background? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Isabella Carl.
Both my parents were born in Poland. My father came from a family that... had at one time been wealthy estate owners, but because of the difficult history of Poland, they still owned the land, but were no longer wealthy. My father was the youngest son of my grandfather's second family, and it was imperative that he do something other than depend upon the land. And so, at age 15, he came all by himself to the United States to make his fortune. He had had some education. He lived on what was then the border of Germany and Russia, and he had gone to some German schools, to some Russian schools, and then he had a private tutor, which apparently was illegal for a few years. So he had a basic education. My mother's family were small landowners, farmers. And it was a fairly large family. My grandmother died when my mother was about 4 years old, at which time my grandfather decided to emigrate to the United States. And he arrived in Baltimore with three children. He left the eldest daughter to look after the three little ones in Poland until he could raise enough money to bring the other three. So 1 year later, at the age of five, my mother was brought by her older sister, who was 16. She brought a five-year-old, a three-year-old, and a one-year-old. Steerage, I suppose. My mother doesn't remember. All she remembers is that she held on to her sister's skirts for the whole crossing. By that time, my grandfather had remarried, and it didn't prove to be a good situation for the children. The three eldest got married in fairly short order, and each one of them then took the three youngest to live with them, and the middle one, who was about 11, fended for himself. Well, in all of this turmoil, there was just no education in any organized fashion. My mother said she had never gone to school. By this time, she was living in Wilmington, Delaware. Apparently, there were no compulsory education laws at the time. By the time she was 13, she and the sister with whom she had lived moved to Detroit, and there she went to work in a cigar factory. And later she learned to become a seamstress. Well, in all this, she learned to read and write, do arithmetic, speak Polish and English on her own. To get back to my father, when World War I, when the United States became involved in World War I, my father joined the Army, by which time he knew some English, but the Army was interested in the fact that he could speak Russian. And so they sent him to Archangel, where he was an interpreter for the staff there, and he also was the town censor for the newspaper, that nothing should be written in Russian that was not appropriate and so forth. Well, eventually, after the war, he came to to Detroit, and he and my mother met, and they got married. Well, I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
Excuse me, your father's name and your mother's name?
My mother's name was Elizabeth, and her maiden name was, let me spell it, G-R-A-C-Z-Y-K. My father was Zygmunt, Z-Y-G-M-U-N-T. Now, the family name, I'll give you that name, was L-U-G-O-W-S-K-I. But when my father got his citizenship, whoever wrote out the papers didn't like the W, omitted it, and my father never had it reinstated. So I never used the W in my name. So we spoke Polish at home. I didn't know any English until I went to school. I was about 7 at the time. My father was a painter. My mother was a seamstress. But my father was always a history buff. He read an awful lot of material, and mostly European history, but some American history. And again, his English was self-taught, but it was really quite good. I made pretty fast progress in school. I started at age 7. At age, on my 16th birthday, I graduated from high school. Then.
That would have been 1930.
Let's see. I was born in 1922. I mean, 21 in December. I graduated in January of 38. Is that right? 37? 38.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. You went to the public schools in Detroit?
I went to the public schools, and it was an interesting experience. My parents, being sort of upwardly mobile, as one would say nowadays, bought a house on the outskirts of Detroit. It was still within the city limits, but it was on the outskirts of Detroit, where new homes were being built, sort of middle-class homes. And in every single home was a family whose origins were in Europe, but in different parts of Europe. So our neighbors were Hungarian and Russian and Italian and Swedish and Belgian and German. And the children spoke that many languages at home, and we all had to learn English in school, and it worked.
What was your high school education like? Did they stress the humanities or the sciences? How do you remember it?
The high school education was on a three-track system. There was a commercial track, and that was mostly for girls who would learn typing, shorthand, and such. There was, they didn't call it industrial, I don't remember what they called it, but at any rate, there was a track in which the students were highly encouraged to study all kinds of trades. Mostly boys, but the girls went in for the cooking and the sewing and such. And if you remember the dates there, both of these were really very popular, even amongst some of the very good students because they could see that perhaps they would have a trade and try to make a living. Otherwise, you know, there weren't any jobs available. Then there was a third track that was college preparatory, and that was rather rigidly set out, in that you know, 4 years of English with all the literature associated with it, and mathematics and a foreign language. Only French and Latin were offered at the high school I went, so I took the French. There were science courses. The only course I took was chemistry. At that time, I really had no guidance. I mean, nobody in my extended family, and there was a lot of extended family in Detroit, was even aware of what science meant. My mother had hopes that I would be a teacher. My father had hopes that I would be a lawyer. And although I thought that these were suitable sorts of professions, it just didn't interest me sufficiently. And it wasn't until I had the chemistry course that a light went on. Aha, this is what I want to do. And it was all quite by accident. The first semester, I remember, I had a very good teacher. The second semester was a disaster, but the first semester carried through. And as far as my interest was concerned.
So you would say your third science question, chemistry, can be directly linked to this course you took in chemistry in high school?
Yes, most definitely. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about your teacher?
It was a woman, and I don't think it mattered that it was a man or a woman. It was a woman. Her name was Mrs. Deming, D-E-M-I-N-G. I don't remember her first name. And she was very enthusiastic about the subject. Apparently, she transferred her enthusiasm to the students. She was lucid in her presentation of the subject. We had laboratory experiments. And the high school I went to in Detroit was Edwin Denby High School, named after some former Secretary of the Navy. It was built during the Depression days. It was a new school when I began to go there, and its laboratories were well equipped. I mean, even though it was built on a shoestring, I remember at that time the city of Detroit had no money. It was paying its teachers and other city employees and scrip. It wasn't real money, but the laboratory seemed to be well equipped in all of the standard things, and I was very impressed by the kinds of experiments we were exposed to.
What kind of things were you doing? Were you doing qualitative analysis? Was that standard then?
Well, we were doing some distillations. We were doing some qualitative analysis, no quantitative analysis. We were doing some inorganic syntheses, and of course, brilliant changes of color in solutions and precipitates coming out of it.
What about the mathematics?
I like the mathematics, and I remember one teacher. Her name is Mrs. Coates, C-O-A-T-S, and I had her for a number of courses, and I thought that it was very practical, but it was algebra and geometry and trigonometry that she was very good in presenting it. She was an older lady with white hair. The only reason I took one science course is because that was all that was required for college preparatory. And it was a little too late by the time I took chemistry to then take the physics and the biology before I went off to college. So, of course, it was later that I was exposed to those courses.
You progressed very rapidly through both elementary and high school education. Mm-hmm. How did that occur? How did that occur? In other words, did you have someone who was watching out for you and helping you to move at that pace?
Well, I think it occurred because of several reasons. One, this was a new area. The elementary school was crowded. The high school was crowded, even though they were both very new schools. And the teachers took the two or three better students in each class, and if they were too crowded, they'd push them up to the next. But that happened a number of times at elementary school. It's strange what one misses with something of that sort. I don't think I missed anything in reading, writing, and arithmetic, because, again, in each class, we always had the three-track system, and one-third of the students were allowed to progress pretty much as fast as they wanted to. What I did miss was Canadian geography and South American geography. And I still find that I was well drilled in United States geography, in the geography of Europe, of Asia. But South America is just a little bit fuzzy still. In high school, it was just a matter of taking more courses per semester. And as long as they could be fit into the schedule, nobody objected.
Were you doing, what were your outside activities outside of school?
Well, there was a large Polish community in Detroit. We did not live near it, but my parents were quite involved in various social clubs. I had, again, as I said, a large extended family. Not so much on my father's side. He had some first cousins living in Detroit, and I was friendly with some of their children. But eventually all of my mother's brothers and sisters came to Detroit, and they had children, so that I had about 25 cousins, first cousins, nearby, another 25 further away. So that was one activity, in that we had a lot of family events, and then social life. In those days, when parents went to the dance at the social club, they also took their children along. I mean, that we stayed up till 2 or 3 in the morning didn't make much difference. We slept the next day. And so there was dancing and singing, things of that sort. Other than that, I mean, of course, played with the neighborhood children. I was interested in sports. I was on the high school tennis team. I was on the high school basketball team. We didn't have a gymnasium. We practiced outdoors, and we were, as far as the basketball was concerned, we were always at a disadvantage when we went to play at a high school where there was a gymnasium. But nevertheless, kept me running around. And although I was never very proficient at it, there was a lot of ice skating in the wintertime. Detroit was a nice place to do that. There's an island in the river called Belle Isle with many canals, and at the time I was growing up, it was a lovely place to take the bus to and ice skate, and had a casino set up to keep one warm and so forth. In high school, there was a group of us, maybe you could call us the elite. I don't think any one of them was particularly interested in science, but there were the students who were the good artists, who liked to perform in plays, write poetry, interested in history or foreign languages. And there, it was sort of loosely knit, but there must have been 20 to 30 of us. And we went together to lectures around the city, to social events at each other's houses, to skate. There wasn't that much place to go swimming in the summertime, but to play tennis. And there was no problem in taking the public transportation, going across town at night.
You've indicated that your parents wanted you to try to go in either education or law. So mm-hmm. The expectation was that you would go on to college after you finished high school?
Oh, yes, yes. Now, of course, finances were tight, and so the expectation was that I would, and actually I did, go to a school in a city. I went to what now is Wayne State University. At that time, I think it was called Wayne University, because it was the University of the County of Wayne, and Detroit now occupies the whole county. At that time, it didn't. That university was also interesting in that it was set up in the old building of Old Central High School after the building was condemned because it wasn't safe enough to be a high school. It was one of these universities. I don't think it quite ran 24 hours around the clock, but it started around 6 in the morning and ended at midnight to accommodate the large numbers of students. It was free. A large number of students who couldn't possibly go elsewhere. But that I entered in January. Must have been January of 38. Yes. And in the spring, there were statewide examinations for scholarships at the University of Michigan. And I hadn't heard about them, but one of my high school teachers called me up and said, you must take this examination. And I was, I think, fourth in the state, and they had about 18 or 20 scholarships, four-year scholarships for the University of Michigan. So I got one of those, and that took care of my tuition, did not take care of room and board. However, the girls who were good students, and most of us had scholarships of one kind or another for tuition, had preference to living in university-run cooperative houses. And it was really a very nice house. The house I lived in had space for 16 girls, and a house mother was an old residential place that was large enough for the number of girls. We did our own housekeeping, and that cut down on room and board expenses very, very much, and was affordable.
Were you the first of this extended family to go on to college, or were there others of your generation who were doing the same thing?
Well, I should say yes, sir, and no. One of my cousins, a year older than I, started at Wayne State University the semester before I did. However, because of health problems, she didn't continue. And so the answer is, I was the first one to graduate from college, yes. Others after me then went on to the university.
And had you decided you wanted to be a chemistry major at that point?
When I entered. It was interesting when I entered Wayne State University. There was a time for a chemistry course which seemed much more appropriate than another time, general chemistry. I didn't know that the E at the end of it stood for engineering. So I was the only girl in a class of roughly 100. And, well, I did well. And the professor there took an interest in me, Joseph Jasper. And he said, of course you'll go on to graduate school. Well, I mean, that was nothing I had heard of before, and so he had to explain to me what it was. And I said, well, it sounded reasonable, but I mean, this was my freshman year. And even after I went off to the University of Michigan the following semester, we kept up a correspondence for a number of years. And yes, no, there was no question about the fact it was going to be chemistry. Now, what kind of chemistry sort of developed later.
Then when you got to Michigan, what chemistry would you have taken then? You would have arrived there as a sophomore?
Well, no, I was a second semester freshman. You see, I had one semester. But the chemistry I took at Wayne State was a class that was supposed to cover all of general chemistry in one semester, and so I went on to a sophomore course in qualitative analysis.
You remember who taught that course?
Yes, Robert Carney. In fact, after that year, he asked if I would be his laboratory assistant for testing, preparing samples for his analytical chemistry courses, and I then worked with him at 50 cents an hour, and that was a high rate of pay. Through my undergraduate days and even through part of the graduate days, we eventually made a movie. And he was interested in photography. He was also concerned with the fact that when he had laboratory experiments that he performed in front of a large class, that only the first five rows could see what he was doing and the rest couldn't. And so he set himself up with photographic equipment, color film, which had just come out for private use. And what we were doing is making a film of all the analytical procedures, the elementary analytical procedures that he would talk about, and then he did not have to demonstrate because it was there up on film. And eventually we had many hours of film for a whole year's worth of analytical procedures. And copies of that film were made. I know that they were used in other universities, other colleges in Michigan. I don't know how much further they spread, but it was written up in the Journal of Chemical Education and such things.
What were your peers like in your chemistry classes? Were there many other women who were taking chemistry courses with you? You said that at Wayne State you were the only woman in it.
Yes, but that was by accident. No, there were not very many. And of course there were fewer as time went on. There were special courses for the nursing school, so that I did not see those girls. A good many of the students were pre-medical students, and there were not very many at all women who were involved. The University of Michigan at that time combined the regular chemistry courses with the engineering school, so that the engineers and the literary students took chemistry together until the senior year. So they were very highly populated by boys.
What attitude did the faculty have towards you as a woman as a chemistry major?
Reactions, I think, range from one end of the spectrum to the other. Some seemed to go out of their way to make things difficult for me. Others went out of their way to help me along. I lost out on one of the nice undergraduate prizes for top student in chemistry because the committee decided, well, this was set up for boys and she's not going to continue anyway, so why give her the prize? However, after I got to graduate school, I did not have much support for my first year because, of course, I couldn't be a teaching fellow. But the second year, a number of the faculty people were very instrumental in getting a fellowship for me called the Rackham Graduate Fellowship, and that was a very nice one that had a stipend of, what, $1,000? That was a lot. That was a lot more than they pay teaching fellows. And I didn't have to pay any fees otherwise. So I had both kinds of experiences.
Did you do any research as an undergraduate?
No, that was not the kind of thing one did then. I didn't start research until graduate school. By the time our daughters went to school, yes, at the University of Michigan, they were doing research as undergraduates. Mm-hmm.